How do you measure yourself with other golfers?
By height.
It's a very, very special honor.
I'm Paula Creamer, and you're listening to Golf Talk Live.
Well, we're waiting.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, a.k.a. John Kreese from Cobra Kai, and you're listening to Golf Talk Live.
And welcome to the 19th hole presented by Golf Talk Live. I am Alan DePugh, your co-host for this next little journey around our virtual 19th hole, where we chat a little golf with my regular co-host, Christian Nazamas.
Alan, how you doing?
You usually chime in right then. Andrew DePugh.
Nah, I'm sorry.
What's going on, guys?
And we have a special guest, a friend of mine, and he's got some great stories. The chief executive officer of Up to Par Golf, as well as Taylor Hospitality, Sean Taylor. Sean, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Really looking forward to this. This is bringing back, it's like deja vu. This is going to be a fun hour.
Well, I'll tell you what. We call it the 19th hole because we all pour a drink. Today I have the Jameson cold brew with a little espresso in it. The only rules here, Mr. Taylor, is that there are no rules. It's kind of like Fight Club.
Good.
And at some point, usually Andrew's putting stroke becomes the target of ridicule.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm gonna see if we can get a smile out of Christian on for this next hour.
Oh, well, we're going to get a smile.
All right,
we get a smile usually around the time that the putting stroke of mine gets brought
up. Okay,
that sounds good. It usually comes in reference to Andrew's putting.
All right.
You'll see that I have a putting mat behind me for good reasoning.
For good reason.
Yeah, exactly. So around that time, you'll get some laughs. But
so, boys, a little bit of golf being played this week. Let's talk about the ladies. They were down at Golden Ocala at the Drive On Championship. And Christian, did you catch any of the action? Because it was, I hate to say boring, but just walk away with it. I mean, Austin Ernst just cruised to victory.
Yeah. 5-shot victory for her over Jennifer Kupcho, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I like golf tournaments a little more close personally. But you know, again, Austin played well. You know, again, hats off to her, and hopefully this could lead to a big 2021 for her.
Andrew, 67, 67, 69, 70. I mean, she cruised. The big names, we were talking about all the big names were playing in this thing, and they were there until the weather came in on Saturday, and then it all kind of went to hell.
It was probably the epitome of putting a tournament on cruise control from start to finish. I do want to say we brought it up on our Twitter page, but I just want to say the inside sources got it right. Yet again, the Cordis sisters were paired together. My picks didn't work out per usual, you know, just as I usually don't, you know, every week. But I got something in the making, apparently, with the inside scoop on the Cordis sisters. So.
Did Mike Armel pick up some inside information from when they were at Lake Nona the week before?
I cannot confirm nor deny who my sources are, as they have to be remaining silent for the future. But, you know, we'll stick with that.
Hey, Sean, you're a pretty good stick, and I'm going to tell everybody about what a stick you are, because I recently sold Hopewell Valley Golf Club
in Hopewell,
New Jersey. And funny story for you other two guys, I'm literally walking through the men's locker room and there's a plaque on the wall. Sean Taylor, club champion.
There you go, baby. Huh?
Love
about
it.
That? That and about 50 cents won't get you anything in this world. So.
I immediately took a picture of that, sent that text over. I said, dude, you're a stick.
Wow. You know, I think I beat three people that could break 80 during to win the club championship during that year. So
hey, don't cut yourself short. I've played over there. It's no joke. You got to make a couple of good swings around that place.
Yeah, that's actually a great golf course. What a fantastic golf course. It's going to be a wonderful addition to the portfolio there at Mercer County, the municipal courses there.
Yeah, the Mercer County Parks and Rec actually acquired the property in December. They're spending some time getting it ready, and you're right. It's going to add to that portfolio. It's going to make a nice mix.
Yep.
I remember the one hole in particular. It's the par three, I believe it is, on the back nine. I can't remember if it's like 16 or 15. That just drops off of almost like a cliff over a little river, if I'm not mistaken.
13.
Okay.
There you go.
I left it short in the water as per usual. So
there you go.
You know, we won't get much further.
Wow. Bad memories, huh?
Very bad memories. Next
hole's really good. It goes up the hill off to the left, 14. Yep. That's actually a really good hole too. The whole golf.
What I was going to ask Sean before we start, you know, are we going to need a cart key and take a tour of Hopewell Valley? But
there you go.
I mean, Austin Earth's 26 putts she averaged this week. Does that usually get it done?
Wow.
Yeah, I would say so personally.
I don't know how you shoot 38 on the back nine of a LPGA event and still win
by five.
Yeah, exactly.
So congrats to her, obviously. A little other story that's noteworthy, I think, is Laura Davies. This is one for us, John. This is the older crap on this podcast. Laura Davies, 57 years old, shoots a bogey-free 69 to make the cut.
Wow.
How cool is that?
Wow. Wow. Laura could move it. I mean, she was long as all get out. She just used to take that little three wood of her and turn it down into the driver and just nuke it about 30 yards past everybody.
She killed it.
Yeah.
Absolutely killed it. So there you go. There's a little rundown on the LPGA event down in Golden Ocala. We thought it was going to be this star-studded field, not to take anything away from Austin Ernst, but wow, did she put on a playing exhibition this week.
It was something to be behold, and hopefully the next time when we have another star-studded field, it's not another runaway, so that way we can at least enjoy the Sunday afternoon back nine. And
exactly.
Be forced to shoot something under 38.
Christian, we've talked about a great golf course, Golden Ocala. We talked about Hopewell Valley, another great golf course. Third great golf course we're going to talk about is our sponsors, Bella Vista, just west of Philadelphia. If you are in the Philadelphia area, you got to stop by there. It's a great track. We're going to take a step away just for one moment, take a word from them. When we come back, let's talk about the golf industry through the eyes of Sean Taylor.
When it comes to great golf in Philadelphia's western suburbs, the conversation always turns to Bella Vista Golf Course. This must-play facility, designed by Jim Blaukovich, is known for its great layout and even greater conditions. It's also home to La Masseria, an elegant facility for weddings, banquets, and private parties. For more information, go to bellavistagc.com. And don't forget their sister courses, Mainland Golf Course in Harleysville and Morgan Hill in Easton.
And we are back, and John, it is a pleasure, as I said from the onset, to have you on the podcast with us. You're active in a little bit of everything. I mean, you've got a hospitality business, you've got a golf management business, you're a PGA golf professional. You spent a little time down in O-Town, which we're going to get your perspective on also. In fact, you got a couple of really cool stories when we get talking about Bay Hill. But we all know, you and I, we've been in the business a long time. This business this past year has been crazy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your two business entities and then give us your perspective on where the overall business is.
Sure. I appreciate that, Alan. I mean, as you said earlier, 2020 was, to a certain degree, a nice shot of vaccine into the golf arm there. And so, so when you look at it, we saw about a 30 to 35% jump in round production going across our portfolio of golf courses. Our company is up to par management. We manage country clubs and golf courses up and down the East Coast, anywhere from Boston all the way down to Florida. We're based here in Virginia, just outside of Lexington, Virginia. I live in Charlottesville, but we're up and down the East Coast. And we also have a second arm of our business, which is the hospitality side of it, where we manage hotels and restaurants, boutique hotels and restaurants, really up and up and down the East Coast as well as hospitality venues. Like for example, we have a Formula Raceway where we manage all of the hospitality for them. And it looks like we're going to be building a hotel for them as well, or at least helping them build a hotel right there on the raceway. So they both complement each other. Golf and hospitality unequivocally complement each other. And so it's a nice blend for our business. When one is down, the other is up. And when they're both up, that's great. But it helps us diversify really, you know, our total offerings going back and forth, and they really help each other along. On the golf side, back to your question, I do believe this is, I guess, this couple of things that I'm cautious about I do think that human behavior has fundamentally changed, and it's going to take a little bit of time for behavior to get quasi back to normal. When I say quasi back to normal, without masks and people freaking out that somebody's standing right next to each other. It was kind of nice to see at Bay Hill today, the crowds. Oh. And you heard them. Okay. And you, I mean, that was like, there, that was, you know, gosh almighty, us as viewers and fans, we miss that. But I do think that behavior has changed slightly. While golf is the original social distance sport that's out there, it's been a nice bump for them. Now I do hope that the momentum continues, that upward momentum continues. Do I think it's going to be as strong as it was last year? I don't think it's going to be as strong as what it was last year. I think if anything, though, we'll see a slight reduction in rounds. But if the weather, especially up in the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic, turns and gets warmer quicker, we're going to see people kind of, you know, that first month, that March, April month time frame is so incredibly important to golf as a whole.
Right.
Because it determines someone's patterns for the entire summer, really.
Right, sure.
All of us, if you get hooked on in golf in March and April, you know what you're doing in May, June, July? You're teeing it up with your buddies.
Yep.
If you don't get hooked on golf in March and April, you know what? You're going to become an occasional golfer. So we saw that last year where there was so much pent up demand for it. And by the time June rolled around, everybody wanted to get out of their place. They had to get out and do something, and that's why golf really took a nice shot up. So I'm hoping that it's a little bit better, and I'm hoping the food and beverage industry, if these crazy governors start opening up our states a little bit more, I hope and we can go on and on about that, but you don't want to get me started with there.
Oh, I know, and I tell you what, I got one question. I know Andrew's chomping at the bit, I can tell. But my question is, and it goes to your point, April, March and April, and I've got good friends that are, and some of our sponsors are in the Myrtle Beach area. Mm-hmm. Myrtle Beach got decimated. I mean, this year, Myrtle Beach, March, April, that's their largest package time. Everything got shut down. It set a domino effect for the remainder of the year for them. Mm-hmm. And Andrew, I may be stealing your thunder on your question, but all right, go for it.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, obviously, you know, Sean, you're in the course management, but also the hospitality. And one of the big things that we discussed very early on this year, you know, one of our topics of discussion was, what do we believe the golf destination trips is going to look like? And is that going to help expand the game? Because let's face it, there's so many new average golfers that took up the sport during 2020 because of just having nothing else to do, like you mentioned. I mean, Christian and I text pretty much, I think, daily, and we're already chomping at the bit, and we're avid golfers. But I can tell you that, you know, my fiance just took up the game this past year. Mm-hmm. So what's your thoughts on, you know, those first timers that are going to be taking their first golf trip? You know, do you see that being a big flux in 2021? Like we're kind of thinking the same boat, or are you in a different realm?
You mean like drive destinations, Andrew, or do you?
Well, I think both. I think, obviously, as we mentioned, driving destinations on our show was the big one because there's still the lure of COVID, but you know, there's states that are starting to open back up that more people are feeling comfortable flying. So just in general, like going to, you know, whether it is drive to or flying to destinations.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Andrew, you bring up a lot of good points, and I'm glad that you brought up Myrtle Beach because we have we own a brewery down in Myrtle Beach. So if you are in the Myrtle Beach area, you need to go to see Tidal Creek Brewery. It's one of the best beers that's on the Grand Strand. And I got to tell you, if it wasn't for the local community for our brewery down there, we would not have made it through 2020 because of the amount of less travelers that were within the Myrtle Beach area. We made it 100% on the Myrtle Beach resident that was there. Now, with that being said, I've been on so many different hospitality webinars and participated in on these kind of give the state of what's travel and tourism going to look like going into 2020. So there's a lot of things that they're calling for right now. I would say that some of the national macro data that's out there, they still don't think from a total number, I would say occupancy. So like when you look at the national occupancy for hotels across the United States, it's roughly about 60%, 60, 61% going across all hotels across the United States. That's still down into the upper 30s, lower 40s right now as we're talking. And they're not predicting that to get back to that 60% until 2022. They're thinking that they're going to get to and that is not until like June of 2022, not January. It's going to be in the June time frame. And with all of that as well, is now you go into like what's the rate going to look like if once the occupancy goes up. And they don't anticipate that the average, what's called the ADR, the average daily rate, is going to get back to pre-COVID times until past 2024.
Wow.
So those are some really, these are, you know, lots more smarter people than myself that are doing some of this analysis based on trends and based on you know, the amount of surveys that are out there. I would say, to a certain degree, even like back to you were saying, those drive to markets, they are really saying that group travel, like when we say like big group travel is not going to come back until at least it's 2024 timeframe with airfare included. So if you're looking at like big, like 20 person buddy golf trips, you know, it's going to be a drive to destination that they're going to. They're not packing their bags, sticking it on a plane and going. I think all of us would love to go someplace warm. Man, I was getting jealous looking at the guys down there where I used to live. You know, I mean, it was colder and all get out here in Charlottesville. And I know it's cold where you guys are. And so, I mean, I just don't see that happening though. I do see the drive trips though. I see those drive trips starting to matriculate into the third quarter, into the fourth quarter going forward. So
we were talking, I think the big thing, and maybe I didn't word it 100% accurately, but like the 20 person groups, like the big, big groups, mm-hmm. We really more were discussing in regards to, you know, hey, we got a group of buddies of like four or five of us. And we want to hop into the car and drive to, let's say it's Pinehurst, just for, because we talk about Pinehurst and the mm-hmm. cradle and, you know, king of the cradle over here with dad, you know, he always wants to bring up the fact that he aced us on the par three course. I think it's because that's the only.
Sean, I am crafty with the wedge.
Well, that's because that's the only yardage you can keep up with us anymore. You know, that's beside the point.
Yeah,
Christian, you had a great question for Sean.
Oh yeah, no, just going back to what you were saying, Sean. Basically about like the whole numbers aspect of it. You know, if it's guys with it's traveling in groups, or if it's guys just traveling in group of four. You know, can you know golf courses in general? Can they keep the numbers up? I mean, is it doable? Do you think, you know, with everything as far as travel packages go and stuff like that? I mean, are courses able to keep up, do you think?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, Christian. I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a flux of business that's changing, Just like hospitality, golf is going to have to make it on its 100% on its social traffic that's there. And that is, you know, the foursomes, the eight guys getting together. I think this is where it goes back to the fundamental change. At least in 2021, do I see that 120 person, you know, golf outing happening a lot? I don't see that happening a lot. I really don't see it. Now with no one going into the office and everybody claiming that they're working, from home. And so that's why we've seen golf really explode. Yep. Let's be honest. Right. When 100% of your meetings are done on Zoom, and you're not going into the office, I think that there's a lot more flexibility within the workplace, and that has boded well, extremely well for golf. No question about that.
Hey, here on the Jersey Shore, of course, I operate. We've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many people escaping keyword there, New York City.
Yeah.
Going to their beach houses on the Jersey Shore and just saying, we're not going back.
Yeah.
And we're going to play golf and we're going to do business on our cell phone. And that's just the way. And they become perfect in their practice.
Right. And you're right, Alan. I mean, that's why, let's be honest, why live in New York City when you don't have to?
Right. Nice place to be from.
And it's a nice place to go catch a show, a nice place to really see some of the sights, and some of the most fabulous restaurants in the world are there. But, if you're looking at, your rent is five times greater than where Christensen's is up there in Syracuse. So, when you look at that but you can work from your home, we have friends of ours, their daughter works in New York City and she works for an ad firm. She's been working out of her house since last February.
Yep.
And her rent.
Oh yeah.
Her rent is through the roof. Why would you do that? If you have the option to live anywhere. So you're starting to see,
lifestyle entrepreneurs.
Yeah. You're starting to see that move out. Yeah. That does help golf. I really think it helps golf.
My sister's from, she lives in Manhattan and she was out for 7+ months. I mean, she was down in Long Island actually at her boyfriend's parents' beach house. Mm-hmm. And she's down there for 7 months working. But it goes back to what you said. I have a bigger apartment than she does and I'm paying $4,000 less than what she is.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
It did help out in golf big time because we had a good family friend of ours, knows a lot of people over at Shinnecock. And Shinnecock, some of their numbers were up. I don't know what their exact numbers were, but a lot of guys that were living down in Long Island area went out and played. I mean, I know friends of mine who take their Zoom meetings out on the golf course and just mute their mic and they just have to listen and they're playing nine holes.
Yep.
So, hey,
Sean, you want to see Christian laugh? Let's talk about Andrew's putting stroke.
Let's not. You already did bring it up though. We have to bring this up. So obviously we wouldn't be perfectly practicing if we weren't using our good friends over at the Perfect Practice putting mats. They're right behind me. For those of you guys, obviously on this call, you can see it. I am actually being able to practice in this little small apartment that, as Sean mentioned, is probably a quarter of the price of New York City apartments. So we are always blessed to have that pricing instead of New York City pricing. But besides that, speaking of pricing though, we obviously want you guys to be able to try this great putting mat out for a lower cost than paying high retail price. So use our code GTL15. Again, that's GTL15 for 15% off. That way you guys can be able to work on your putting anywhere, any time of the day, no matter what kind of rain, shine, or anywhere in between. They roll up, they can be taken anywhere. They have three different sizes, all the way from their little small mini size all the way to the XL size. It can be rolled up all the way down to 15 feet. So it's definitely the option if you're looking to get your putting stroke under control before the beginning of the 2021 season. I highly recommend it. I know that we've had a lot of great success with these guys and, I'm living proof of it because my putting is actually somewhat under control now. So.
Sean, a really funny story here. I play with Andrew. Last time I played with Andrew, actually, I think he made more chip-ins than actually one hitting greens and two making putts. His fiance actually made a bomb on one of the holes. And that was a longer putt than Andrew probably has seen the last few times we played.
I did not have have a putt made outside of 5 feet, Sean, to give you a proof of an idea of how bad it is. And he is not wrong. I chipped in for birdie more times than I made a birdie putt.
Like that one guy that goes like way down the shaft, man, where he's almost practically.
Oh, the claw thing.
Shall we?
There you go.
Yeah, I think it was Garrigus too, right? Yeah, like a
Joel Damon. Wasn't it Joel Damon that did that? You had like a finger around the putter. I don't know. I gotta try something.
No, the broom stroke. Seriously, I thought it was Kyle Peters' new guy.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Okay. No. But you know, the beauty of our little 19th hole, our little thing, is we love to tell stories and we love to bust on people. We obviously bust. Andrew's an easy target with his putting stroke. But Sean, something you obviously have built a not one, but two successful companies. Kudos on both of those. But before that, you were just a PGA golf pro like me. But you were at a really cool place, Grand Cypress. And you were telling us a story before we started recording. You have a connection to Bay Hill. You got to tell the listeners.
Yeah, it was actually before I got to Grand Cypress, I ran the Duke University golf club for years, and living there in Durham, I really got to meet a lot of hence a huge Blue Devil fan that's out there. But never forget taking the call, saying, "Hey, I want to get my granddaughter." My grandson, some golf lessons. And it was lo and behold, it was Mr. Palmer. He just happened to call the golf shop. And I happened to answer the phone at the time. So, what a huge, experience with that. So wound up giving Mr. Palmer's grandson, Will, golf lessons while his daughter lived there in Durham. And so over the course of that time, actually wound up, becoming to the point where I got to talk to Mr. Palmer quite a bit, especially giving him golf lessons. And it's kind of weird when you're giving Will
golf lessons,
right? Giving Will golf lessons, and all of a sudden Mr. Palmer pulls around in a golf cart and he's watching you give a golf lesson to his grandson. So
yeah, how'd you feel?
A little nervous, sweat was on the brow. Making sure that I was saying everything the right way, almost kind of getting the double validation of everything. So when I took the role at Grand Cypress, oversee all the golf down there at Grand Cypress, I actually gave him a ring. I said, "Hey, I'm moving to Orlando, and I'm going to be taking there at the Nicklaus facility." And he basically said, "Well, you know what? When you're here, you need to come by the clubhouse." So I swung by the clubhouse, and he just looked at me. He goes, "You got to live here. You got to live in Bay Hill." And I was like, "Okay." So my realtor really started zeroing in on Bay Hill. We wound up buying a house there in Bay Hill, and as luck would have it, wound up playing in Palmer's group all the time, the Bandits. So he had a standing tee time Monday, and when anytime when he was in town. He has standing tee time 10-16 during the week, and then 12-16 on Saturdays and Sundays. So obviously I worked all the time, but Saturdays I would scoot out of work and tee it up with Mr. Palmer all the time, which was really cool. Obviously, I played a fair amount of golf with him, and he lived. I'll tell you, he lived in the most unassuming house in Bay Hill. It was crazy. You would never know that it was Arnold Palmer that was your next door neighbor that was there. It was a little 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, probably maybe 1,800 square feet in there. He ruled the roost there at Bay Hill, driving around on his golf cart. But what a great man. And it was a lot, obviously a lot of fun, and played a lot of, lot of good golf with him. He was he had so many great stories, all throughout all the times that we played. So
that's good stuff. Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask, obviously, since you've gotten to play with one of the greats, if not the great, there's always the argument of who was the better one. Obviously, Jack's got more majors and everything like that, but you always hear that these types of guys that are at the top of that level and echelon just have that competitive streak. So when you played in those Saturday morning groups, did he ever just want to just, you know, give it to you and just whoop you? Or was he very laid back and and just like, hey, you know, we're going to go out here and play for fun?
So I'll give you, I'll answer your question with a story. So this goes back a couple of years. He was actually playing in this exhibition match. And I finally caught him up on that Saturday. And I said, Mr. Palmer, I said, man, great round that you played. I think it was like out in Idaho, Coeur d'Alene or someplace that was out there. And he shoots 69, right? He shoots 69, which is well below his age and everything like that. And I said, you know, great round. And he looked at me like, you SOB, are you kidding me? Right. And he says, Sean, he says, let me tell you something. And I'm like, okay, here it comes. Right. And he says, you know, he said, 2 weeks ago, I played out here. Right. He said, I played from the tips. I shot 66. Now that is good golf. Right. Then I'm like, holy cow. You know, I mean, the hair was up on the back of his neck. I mean, he was just all in, man. Anytime that he could jar one and give it to you, I'm telling you, he was. He would give it. Oof. He'd give it right to you. You know, there's and he could talk some smack. I'll tell you, you know, I mean, he would definitely talk some smack along the way. So but super great guy. Oh my gosh, he was such a great guy.
That's great.
And just so many great stories to play with.
Not to keep going, you know, steal your thunder, Deb, but I have to ask another one because you brought up before, I think it was before we actually got on the recording, the fans and everything, just how amazing it was down at Bay Hill. I know we're kind of getting a little ahead of our topic here.
I'm ready.
Oh, okay. So here's the real one. Did anybody get to watch the 18th hole of Bryson putting the final putt? Did anyone get to see that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Did anybody else just laugh hysterically when they started booing him because he walked off the last putt? Like, that was the epitome of, like, I'm so happy fans are back. Because
I know.
That was just incredible.
It was good. It was so good to see. You know, it was just good to see. I mean, it's good to see people that are out there. You could hear them. I mean, I'm so over the non-fan thing. You know, I'm so over it in all the sports, really. I mean, I can't wait till you start to see good fans come out. I don't know though, in y'all's crazy state in New York, if you'll ever have fans again. I think it'll probably be illegal at least for another decade or so.
We finally got approval for 10%, and that was 10% with, you know, 10,000 seats or more. And
there you go.
There's more, like, you have to have, even if you have the negative test, you have to have, it's a mess. It's tough.
So Christian, I got to ask you, let's dial it back to the tournament here for a second. Billy Horschel's comment in the first two, well, it was either Thursday or Friday. There's a reason I'm inside here, inside the ropes, and you're outside the ropes, giving it to the fans.
I didn't see it, no, but there's a story. I got a story about Billy Horschel. I was at the PGA, I believe, at it was either the Heritage – actually, no, it was the Heritage down in Hilton Head. I was with my dad. We're walking around. We see Billy, right, and he's just, you know, going on his business. He's on, like, I think the drivable ninth. And he, you know, hit his tee shot a little right, and everybody's swarming, right? And this guy, like, you know, when you have to sneeze, you can't really hold it in. It just kind of comes out. Obviously, you can't. This guy just happened to have one of those moments. Billy's dropping F-bombs to this guy like no other. And I'm, like, 14 at the time. And I'm just sitting there like, whoa. Like, I couldn't even believe it. So that doesn't surprise me with Billy. Billy's got that fire attitude. I love Billy Horschel. I think he's a phenomenal golfer, and I wish he won more.
So, he was quoted and said, hey, he goes, I started thinking about it last week, you know, and I just decided I wanted to give it back to them because they were giving it to me.
So I love that.
I love the fact that fans are back, but the players having that emotion – is what's going to draw TV ratings to golf again, in my mind. Like, Tiger, the Tiger effect obviously is an effect. Like, no matter where Tiger is and wherever Tiger will be for the end of time, like, people will follow. But the average guy does not have that. Even like some of the biggest names like DJ doesn't have that pull always. So, like, for example, the other one that I saw on PGA Tour on the app, because I was watching it there, when Bryson drove the almost drove the sixth green on Saturday, he looked like a dude out of the Long Drive contest. Like, he had his hands up in the air, like he was pumping his fist. Like,
he is out of the Long Drive contest.
I mean, well, yes, but he's on the PGA Tour doing that. Like, that's fun entertainment. Like, I laughed when I saw that.
So, and Sean, as a current PGA member, we've had Don Ray on before, mutual friend of both you and I. What is the most widely watched golf telecast right now? The Ryder Cup. Mm-hmm. Hands down, all the time. And why, I think? Because it's the one time. And where's the other one everyone looks over to? Scottsdale, mm-hmm, for the waste management. Because people get a little rowdy. Mm-hmm. Is that where golf is going, in your opinion? I mean, Bryson, by the way, I got to get your opinion. You played Bay Hill, obviously, mm-hmm, number six. How insane is that?
That's crazy. The line that he took it off down there is crazy. I remember Hank Caney. Remember Hank?
Oh, yeah,
Hank,
yeah.
Caney, Hank Caney drove the sixth green too. When we were there, when I was down there, which is crazy, you know, I mean, his ball flight would just go into the ozone area, but the line that he took it was so nuts, because, I mean, it is, that is a three shot hole. You know, you knock it out. There's about four trees. That is the line that you take it out. If you're going to bop it out there about 270, you're going to aim at those. You go a little bit left, you're wet. If you go a little right, you're making it a lot longer. And then you got a really kind of a difficult layup that's going up there, because it gets so skinny in that area with it. You know, so if you're hitting some sort of long iron or hybrid up in that area, you really got to be fairly precise. And then you have, you know, like a lob wedge into it. The line that he takes was just, you know, he plays. He's to, you know, what they used to say with Nicklaus, he, you know, plays a game that's
different. There's a game I'm familiar with.
Yep. Yeah. He, you know, what I was so surprised today watching him, I don't know if you caught his tee shot on 15. So they moved 15, they moved the tee box back across the road, which is crazy, because they used to be a little, like, about 420 yard par four, hard dog leg right. And it always given everybody fits. I remember VJ flying it over the trees down the right-hand side. And when he won there at Bay Hill several years back. But, you know, here he is across the road, and he whips out driver, and he still takes it over the trees, and he still hits it so darn long, and he pushes into the left. I mean, that is just – that's crazy. That's cray-cray long right there. You know, that is so long.
The thing that's amazing to me is, like, he know – like, we talk about, like, these guys are so much better than everyone realizes, right, Sean? Mm-hmm. So yeah. We were talking about, like, DJ and how he is, you know, usually night and day above everybody when he's on. But with Bryson, what's amazing to me about Bryson, he knows, because he's so scientific with it all, he knows every single centimeter that's on a golf course. That, like, mm-hmm, he's got everything dialed in. He knows every single yardage. Mm-hmm. He knows if it's hard, it's going to roll this far. Like, he knows everything. I mean, I don't know if you guys caught it in the final telecast either. And now I don't really see it as that big of a deal, but the rules official came over on 16 because, mm-hmm, it was just slightly in, like, the sprinkler head was just slightly in his path. Mm-hmm. And so he used the rules of golf to be able to move it over. And somebody was like, well, I really don't see it, but if the rules official's telling him, he can do it. Like, he knows everything so precisely that it allows him to just take advantage of certain situations. I didn't know if you guys ever caught any of stuff like that, though.
Well, hey, Christian, I got to ask you, because I know the three of us, we debated it, and it's great to hear Sean's perspective, obviously, having been there many times. But did he really – I mean, he bombs it on six, which is insane. Mm-hmm. But he leaves himself a 60-yard bunker shot.
Yeah.
Then he spins off the green on the right, and he hits an amazing shot. We were debating, does he really benefit by bombing it
in
over?
In my opinion, no. I mean, from that, from where he hit it, no, he doesn't benefit. Now, if he's in the fairway, obviously he's going to benefit from that because he can obviously hit it close with a punch shot.
Of course, he makes his birdie.
On a par five.
Right.
He makes his birdie, but takes 16, par five, makes par. You know, he hits it in the green. He hits it in the bunker, obviously. And he could have sealed the tournament on 16 right there and then if he makes birdie on that hole to get to 12. He could have.
Well, right? I think the big thing with him on that hole, though, like, I mean, he got a very unfortunate, like, that for some reason that thing stuck up right against the lip. If that doesn't stick against the lip, right, he's so strong, he's probably on the green anyway.
But I'm saying that Lee Westwood has 159 yards in on 16. What's Bryson going to have? 60?
Right.
Maybe a punch shot, like, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I do think Bryson, what he's doing is great, right? And it's working for him, obviously. I don't think Bryson played his best golf today, personally. I do think that there was that guys could have caught him, but that's my opinion.
I actually had it in my show notes. He tied for the low round of the day at 71. Nobody challenged.
Yeah, Bejo played phenomenal. Like, it was awesome to watch the guys. It kind of played as like a U.S. Open, if you think about it. It was that tough of conditions out there. I mean, nobody was breaking par. I mean, you have guys that were shooting. I mean, guys were 12 over today.
Bay Hill is just hard. It is a hard golf course. I mean, it never lets up. It starts off on the first hole. It's tough. Then you go to two, three. It is just relentless. There's really no, you know, there's really the 12th hole is, I would say the 12th hole is probably the easiest hole that's out there. I think it's easier than 16. 16 is not an easy hole. They make it look easy in the sense where they can hit it down there and they got like whatever, 100 and
in, a flip wedge for as far as they hit.
Okay.
The ball.
You know what? So the two leaders, what'd they make? They made par. You know, yeah, they just, you know, it's just a, and then you go 17. 17 is as hard as a par threes you'll ever play. I mean, it's just a beast. It's a beast of a golf course.
And my thing about, like, Bryson, too, is that I'm worried about Bryson is that Bryson wants to hit the ball as far as he can and try to make course as short as possible. Mm-hmm. But if Bryson misses spots like he did today on 6, for example, and he leaves himself in crappy situations, yeah, I don't think the bomber is going to help him personally.
He laid the sod over it on 8, I think it was, or the little punch shot short of the pond. He was trying to hit that little stinger and laid the sod. He was lucky he didn't knock it in the water there.
Yeah.
But you're talking about tough. I mean, I don't know if you guys caught it. Robert Gomez shot 92 on Friday.
Yeah.
47, 45, and got disqualified because he refused to sign his sport card.
There you go.
I mean, if you're looking for a way to not have a...
Yeah. Jarred it in on 18 with a 7-iron.
Beat the shark.
That's right.
Murphy. Yep. Absolutely.
Sometimes you just don't want to sign your card if it's that bad, right? Why we gotta hate on them, right?
You gotta sign them all.
Oh God.
Good, bad, or ugly.
Well, I think the big thing that take away from Bay Hill is there's never really one person that's able to truly conquer that type of course. Like, it can be played so many, and you see that with a guy like Lee Westwood. You see that with a ball striker, Corey Connors finishing, you know, right there again, mm-hmm, not getting the job done. Heck, Jordan Spieth, and I never thought that this was coming, but Jordan Spieth was leading the golf tournament for a while. I mean, we've seen him. He can't hit the broadside of a barn, and now he's, you know, 4 consecutive top 15 finishes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like a very good golf course. It's really – it's atypical of your Florida golf course. It's not like a normal Florida golf course. There's a lot of similarities between Bay Hill and, say, like Innisbrook, the Copper Course that are there. Both are atypical from Florida. It's not your normal just flat pancake, water, bunker. I mean, there's trees and that they have to contend with. And the greens were lightning fast today. They were firm. You know, I mean, they were very, very firm. You saw how the ball released on the greens today, which you don't usually see. Usually you see they just stop. You know, I think the one thing back to Bryson, though, guys, I think when you add it all together in a totality of a golf tournament, and you have four rounds, and he's hitting those shots, you know, granted it doesn't work every single time, but it works more times than it doesn't. And so the laws of statistics are in his favor with that, you know, and it doesn't work for like you and I, you know, for the four of us, because we're not that strong. Like, I don't think any of us, you know, if you take all of our combined benches, we'd get about like 50% of what that dude probably throws up on a barbell.
The amount of calories that guy is consuming right now, and just the transformation of what he's gone through, it's unbelievable.
Hold on a second. We got
in all fairness, Andrew, the former hockey athlete, did. He did, what was it, 370 used to
there you go.
Front quad or
it was a lot.
It was a lot.
Then my knees gave out and I don't squat more than like 135 anymore.
Before those mocha frappuccinos started catching up.
No. Those were the Chick-fil-A sandwiches for the year I was living in the South. That's still suffering from it today, but that's beside the point. No, I guess here's my thing, Sean, and we're coming down 17 right now, as we jokingly like to say here on the 19th hole. So my big thing, we've discussed the rollback effect, like people discussing rolling back the ball, and we made the comment that that's not going to do anything, because the guys who are you know, hitting it Bryson long, DJ long, they're still going to be that much further ahead. Mm-hmm. The only difference is now guys are truly athletes when they play this game, versus before Tiger, there wasn't the pure, I'm going to work out in the gym and become an athlete so I can hit it out further than you. Like, there wasn't that effect.
And Andrew, not to interrupt, but I'm going to, perfect example. And Sean, you may have run into him there in the Mid-Atlantic. Used to grew up playing my golf courses, Billy Hurley, PGA Tour player. Billy was kind enough to hop on the show a few months back, and that's exactly what he talked about. Today's, it's athletes. They're athletes. They're young. They're coming out there. It's not golf as a second thought. These guys are tuned and ready to go by the time they hit the tour at 22.
And golf, you know what though, the guys that you see, right, the guys that you see out there are the best athletes of their high schools.
Right.
They're not playing soccer. They're not playing basketball. They're not playing other, you know what? They're just a really good athletic kid that happened to choose golf that's there.
I think it's the Tiger effect now 20 years later.
Yeah. I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. You know, you look at DJ, that dude is an athlete. He can palm a ball. He can slam, you know, he can dunk. And you look all the, like Brooks Koepka, who would want to be in the octagon with Brooks Koepka? Nobody.
Bryson.
You
know? Depends on what they're playing.
Bryson. Bryson would, you know, but that'd be a cool showdown right there. So they're really, you know, like you said, they're really good athletes and they're committed to it. They are working out, you know, it's not just Gary Player who is doing the Jack Lane calisthenics all the time. These guys are lifting weights and you know, they're compressing the ball at a much greater rate than what other athletes did before. And I agree with what you guys said. You know, there's no sense of rolling back the ball. If you're going to roll back the ball, then you got to move the basketball arena to rim to 12 feet. You got to push out the outfield out to 450. You know, it's just stupid. Yeah, you know, that's just stupid. And then
they tried to have conversation about expanding the goalposts on a hockey rink. I agree.
You know, so.
Okay, look, we could sit here and chat all night, but Christian, we are on 18. We got to put the flag in. Yep. I always give you the first opportunity because you.
I know, right?
Expound.
Well, we didn't talk about our picks. All right, we didn't talk about our picks.
We could gloss right over that.
We're good.
Hey, I'm just – no, absolutely not. All right, my pick won by a landslide.
V.
I just want you to say that my dark horse pick almost came in.
Your dark horse pick was Kevin Kisner, right? No, or who was your dark horse pick?
Yeah, it was Ian Poulter.
Ian Poulter, and he wasn't too far off of your boy. So
my guy was top 10. Look, so I'm just saying, my guy was top 10.
My only comment on picks is this. Victor Hovland was there until he wasn't there. And my only other comment is – terrible weekend. My other comment is, go back to our – we're talking about the betting odds. If some 13-1 Bryson went off at, can you imagine the money if you put down on that on VegasInsider.com? Hmm.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
So, Christian,
I just had to throw that one in there because I won this week. So, I'm sorry. Is that your final comment?
Is that your final comment?
That's all my final comment needs to be for the show, personally.
Andrew, moving on.
My final comment is my dark horse pick didn't do as badly as you all said they was going to do. So I just want to throw that one out there. He didn't win, but, you know, it is what it is. Sean, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Greatly appreciate you having
me. Yeah, thank you, Sean.
By the show. Guys, girls, anybody that is new to or listening to us, please give us a follow on all social media. Please be sure to stop by and check out Sean Taylor's company, Up to Par Management, and Taylor Hospitality. We greatly appreciate him stopping by, so we want to give him a love and shout out there. But again, as always, guys, please do continue to feel free to follow us on everything. We are having a lot of cool contests with our products of the month. We got a lot of cool other stuff coming in the pipeline that is set to run here in 2021 that we want you to be sure to not miss out on. Looking forward to Thursday's show to hopefully get a better picks. And that's where I'll turn it over to you, Dad, for your closing thoughts for the Monday edition of our show.
All I'm going to say is, again, our product of the month, Kent Wool Socks. Check them out. They are amazing. And I'm actually going to let our special guest co-host, Sean, my friend, great to see you again. Share a few laughs, hear a few stories. Thanks for coming on. Any final thoughts before you escape the 19th hole?
No, this was a lot of fun. I appreciate the time that you guys did. You know, love to come on again at some time.
Absolutely. Standing invite.
We conquered. The number one goal was get a smile out of Christian. And look at that. You know, how about
Hey, we're going to have to get together now and play some golf, all right? We got to bust on Andrew's putting in person as opposed to over the internet, all right?
All right, that sounds
good. And awesome. Sean, we conclude every story because Christian hit it long and straight because
it beat short and crooked.